Hello and welcome to episode 65 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today, we're talking about a standard deck of 52 cards. There's probably no more versatile component for gaming, so we're first going to take a look at the history and then talk about some of our favorite games using just this simple deck. But first, a huge thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Geeljam, George Deere, and Adam Harrison. And also a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Awesome. Thank you, Josh, and welcome back.
Oh, yeah.
How was London?
Oh, it's amazing. It's just like Harry Potter.
I think it's called London Town.
How was London Town?
Yeah, it was spiffing. Oh, God, I can't believe I've done that. I do not play into your stereotypes.
Say, bip, bip, cheerio, bangers and national.
Dare you. Earlier on, you said that you just, like, I was like, oh, it was amazing just looking at things. And you were like, yeah, look, there's bangers and there's mash. As if they were just, like, hanging out in the street. That's not how it works. It's not just bangers and mash on the streets.
I've been there a couple
Chris
times.
Does Chris actually know what bangers and mash is?
I do. It's the only food worth eating in England. I was looking forward to fish and chips. Fish and chips in England are bland and disgusting.
We have to put malt vinegar on them.
Exactly. Thank you, Kitty.
You have to like soak it in malt vinegar.
Yes, that's the best part.
I'll just drink the vinegar.
I'm not even British and I know that that's how that works.
All right, bangers and mash. Is sausage and mashed potatoes. It's quite delicious.
Well done. Normally gravy as well.
And gravy. And it was good. So, but we're glad to have you back.
Thank you.
All right.
We glad to be you. Back.
Yeah. Aww, I miss you guys too.
We even waited, and everyone who listened last week when I said it wasn't me unprepared, no, I was just covering for Josh. Josh said, I want to be here for the contest winner. Yes. I want to be here.
I did.
That's totally what happened.
Yeah, totally so what happened. This is why we waited. But Josh is like, also, I think we should draw two winners since we made them wait a week. And because I'm starting to unpack my game room and I have even more leftover games than I should. So there are two Home Depot-sized medium moving boxes of games that are being ready to ship out. And there are two winners.
Oh, my goodness. Thank God I insisted on it.
I'm just saying. Yeah. These people owe you for all of the games they're about to get.
It was all Chris.
No. No, I'm going to still make you take them to the post office. I'm actually not sure. They might be too big. The post office might not take them. So,
oh boy.
We'll see. The medium-sized boxes are pretty big.
Yeah.
All right.
So I told you guys that I was going to hide the winners from you. When what I did is I turned the text white.
I see that.
So now, see that first winner there?
Whoa.
Oh, my God.
All right. What do you guys have to say it? All right, Kitty.
It's Emil Geeljam.
It's Whoa. About time.
Wow. Not Jim Jam.
Not Jim Jam.
Or not Jill Yim. Or whatever Gloria said.
Jill Yum.
Yeah, I think that's what she said.
Yeah. So Emil, you are getting a box, and I'm talking a medium-sized Home Depot box, literally written with, it'll probably say games on it, but it might say kitchen or it might say bedroom. it's going to say something because it's actually one of my moving boxes. So that will be in the mail. By, let's see, today is, wow, it's early. It's Tuesday as you listen to this. It's Monday as we record it. By the end of the week, it'll be in the mail for you. And the other one is, and this is the one I kind of spoiled the surprise, but Josh, I'll let you announce this one.
It's Steven Seitz.
Yay, Steven.
Hooray. So
you will also get that. Now, I'm going to put a little asterisk next to this because I haven't checked the addresses yet. I'm pretty sure you're both in the continental U.S., but if you're not, then it's going to cost you about $150 to get this box. So if that's the case, we'll work with that and maybe we'll donate that to a different listener. But I think both of you guys are in the city or in the country. So new contest, which I also promised, and we even have a few entries here because I like when I just say, start emailing me. I don't know what I'm giving you yet, but I still get like November giveaway. Give me whatever you got. All right. It's no secret that last week we announced that we picked up a box of Pandemic Legacy 2.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
I know, right? Mm. So today I picked up two more of them because they have multiple covers. There's an orange cover and a black cover.
You're insane.
I know, which is why I'm going to give them away.
Oh.
So holidays are coming up, lots of craziness coming up. So I'm going to do the November, December contests sort of together. If you enter November or December, and you can just email me and say you're entering either, we're going to do two drawings. So everyone who enters from now until, what did I say this? Two drawings.
November 28th.
On November 28th, we're going to make a drawing. So everyone who's entered by then, you will be the first person that will get a Pandemic Legacy Season 2 box sent to you. It'll get sent to you that week. Then, everyone who entered up to that point, and everyone who enters up until December 17th, will also be in a drawing for November 19th, which will announce it. So I can get it to you before Christmas. So 2 months in a row, Pandemic Legacy Season 2, it's worth it. It's going to be awesome.
That's crazy.
I mean, we haven't actually opened ours yet, but we know it'll be worth it.
We know it'll be worth it.
Oh my God, yeah. So
it is.
How bad are we going to feel if it turns out it's just like it's a flop?
We're going to pretend it's awesome until January.
But it can't be a flop. It's Pandemic Legacy. It's so good.
It's going to be. Everyone I've heard that has played it has said this is it's amazing.
Well, there you go.
All right. So, I'm trying not to get my expectations too high because I'm worried, like, what if it is? Like, some of those TV shows, like, they had a great first season in them, and then, like, they never expected to be renewed, and season two comes around, and everyone's like, oh.
I don't think there's anything to be said. So, in Pandemic Season 2, you start off of land. You start in the ocean. Not a spoiler, it's just that's where you start. Right. I don't think it says anything that the first thing you have to do is jump your little meeple over a shark. I think that that's totally just coincidental. I don't think that has anything to do with... Yeah. Josh, is that a reference that you don't have in...
I don't get that.
There is an actual episode of the show Happy Days in which Fonzie jumps over a shark and it became like the... When a show gets bad, you jump the shark.
Yeah. So before Fonzie jumped the
literally
shark,
water
Happy Days
over
was
it.
Like an amazing show. Every episode after that, it was terrible. So anytime a show is like good and then it gets bad, you say it jumped a shark.
So you're saying this shark thing was just... This is clearly a made-up thing. This doesn't actually happen in Pandemic Legacy.
I don't know. You're going to have to play and find out.
No, everyone's going to
enter the contest. Win a copy. See if it's true.
All right. On to Kickstarters. I've been a little bit lax in the last couple of weeks. I have reasons. But this week...
How dare you not spend all your money on Kickstarter games?
It wasn't the not spending money. It was just not having time to figure out what I wanted to spend it on.
Right.
So this week, I actually backed 4, but I only put 2 on here because 2 of them have already closed, and one of them I think I did last week. I don't know. But anyway, these are the 2 that are good, that I like, and at least that I backed because I thought they might be good. So the first one's Sorcerer. And this one, their little blurb is, Sorcerer is a dark fantasy game that melds the best elements of a strategy card game with a tactical board game. So this one is done by the same people who do Star Realms and Hero Realms and Epic Card Game. They know how to do card games, and they are like passionate about gaming. The art on this stuff is amazing. And one of the cool things about this is you create a deck by choosing, let's see, at the start of the game, each player will create a unique sorcerer by combining 1 of 4 character decks with 1 of 4 lineage decks and 1 of 4 domain decks. So you pick these 3 different combinations of cards, you shuffle those cards together, and that's your character. And when you put that all together, it comes up with like a true name because you're the Dark Sorcerer of Elbenhain.
Oh, it's kind of like those, a random name generator.
Yeah, like the things you see on Facebook where it's like the first letter of your last name means this, and now you have a wolf name.
Exactly. Sort of. Not at all like it, but yes, exactly like that.
Exactly like that.
So I thought that was kind of a cool way. And these guys, like I say, I'll back pretty much anything they put out at these days. The base game's $45. If you want all the extras and all the expansions and all that kind of stuff, is $75. Both of them include all the stretch goal things. So if you liked like Star Realms or Hero Realms, check this game out. It looks like it's going to be pretty cool. The other one's actually fairly similar. It's called Dyrewild. It's a cooperative deck-building dungeon crawl. So this one, a full cooperative deck-building tactical dungeon crawl featuring creature crafting, treasures, magic, heroes, upgrades, and miniatures.
Sounds like an interesting mix. A cooperative deck-building dungeon crawl.
Exactly. Which is why I'm like, I must check this out. Huh. You are... What's the word? I can't say it. I think it's animist. So... The heroes are like you're playing a cat or a dog or...
Animist.
Yeah, you're like a human...
Would be my attempt at that word.
Yeah. So you're playing an animal that looks human. So it has that kind of like... I don't want to say cutesy, but animalish art.
What are those books that they turn into animal? Like there's a whole series of them.
The only thing I remember is Sweet Pickle books.
To my goosebumps in my mind. Like, they're the same kind of, like, easy reader level.
So what's happening now is Kitty is now Googling. So this one is a 1-4 player game where players assume the role of animists heroes and can summon forth creatures of great and small to aid them in battle. These heroes must band together and defeat minions across several lands in order to ultimately defeat the fallen members of their own order. So really what it comes down to is it's a deck building game. There's a bunch of cards around the board, and then there's, you have little miniatures on the board, and you move around and you attack things and you try to win as a group.
Sweet.
I figure if you're going to play animals and play together, it was a cute one.
Yeah.
One of the ones I did back that's already closed, but it's worth taking a look at the Kickstarter pledge manager when it comes out, is Time of Legends, Joan of Arc. This, I kind of like wibble wobbled on it back and forth, and I'm not going to go too much into it because the Kickstarter has closed already, but it got crazy, crazy support, like 1.5 million funded. So if you want that kind of Joan of Arc time period, epic battle.
Why do you think it was games, so popular?
I'm thinking it's because it said Legends in the name.
Really?
That's what I'm... It might not be true, though.
Yeah. Well, if any listeners know why it was so popular, let us know.
Yes, definitely let us know. So, Josh, we have a feedback. You have to read the segment, though, and even though I put Kitty segment intro.
Right, that's fine. Yes, well, let's get some feedback about some past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG.
Kitty has some feedback first.
Animorphs.
All right.
Oh,
just to continue from the last segment.
Well, I forgot what that was even related to.
Yeah, I don't even know either.
Animorphs. Don't worry about it. Animorphs.
Yep. It was every a TV kid from show. The 90s. Oh, yeah, I know. Well, Animorphs. No,
those books, yeah. Because yep. they turned into them. They made a TV show.
It was
show?
A TV show.
Oh, my gosh.
The guy from Expanse was in it, I think. No, maybe it was a different show. Anyway. So, from Tim Vernig on GameholeCon. Hi, TGT gang. It was great meeting you guys at GameholeCon, and I really enjoyed playing Blood Rage taught by Kitty. She did a great job teaching a game she wasn't that familiar with. I was trance, but I had a great time playing. Glad you could make it to GHC.
GameholeCon.
Being a Madison local, I'm like a proud parent who loves seeing his kid make good. It's still a young convention, but getting better every year. Great that game media like you can come and share with their listeners about how good GHC is. I really enjoyed your episode on the con, and I'm now a subscriber and look forward to listening to your future casts.
Well, Tim, now that Josh is back, you'll know that we're going downhill.
Classic.
But it was nice meeting you as well. And Kitty, you have played Blood Rage a few times.
I played Blood Rage once before I taught it. Once. And the only thing I messed up was the way that the pillage token works.
Oh, yeah, the pillage token.
Because I taught Cry Havoc the same day, and I was thinking of the purple tokens of Cry Havoc. They just disappear.
Where the trial comes up, yep.
And so I was just taking away pillage. And at some point, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. How do they battle each other? And I made Chris come over, and he's like, yeah, we need to put back the pillage tokens, and this is how they actually work. Yes. But, you know, it was fun still, and it didn't affect play of the game too much because we figured it out
by
right
age
at the
two,
second round. Yeah.
Yeah, and Josh was supposed to teach Blood Rage.
Yeah, I
was.
So it's all Josh's fault.
It really is all Josh's fault.
Yeah, I know. I mean, God, I hadn't seen my brother in 2 years or, you know, my friend's wedding. Like, that doesn't matter. I should have just come to GameholeCon.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We agree.
Good.
Okay. All on the same page.
All right.
So we've got a quick question from Jeremy Fisher. What do you consider essential expansions? I understand you should play some games before buying an expansion, but some of them change the game so fundamentally that it's almost like a different game. Deck builders are a completely different animal. There are so many expansions for them. Some of them help, others tend to drag out the game without really adding anything. Can you think of games that you wouldn't play without the expansion? What about Kickstarters? I always buy the expansion when I back a game. I figure that they've been balanced and are almost essential. Consider Galaxy of Tryon.
So I'm waiting for Galaxy of Tryon still, but this is a what it looks to be like a space Carcassonne.
Yeah.
And Carcassonne's a good place to start because we've played a number of expansions with that. And I don't really think there's any expansions for that I'm like, you must have it.
You must have it. No, I would say the base game is really fun all on its own. and that each of the expansions kind of adds its own different kind of spin to the game.
But none of them are essential.
None of them, I would say, are essential. You really enjoyed the Princess and the Dragon expansion.
I thought for a two-player, it made it far more interactive.
Yes.
Like, you were able to mess with the other person. Because there, otherwise, there's not really messing with them besides just blocking.
Which is what I like about the game. It's not really a screw your neighbor. It's just kind of a, like, oh, I'm maximizing my play, which I love about that game. So, you know, maybe some of the expansions for Carcassonne where it turns it into a little bit more of an interactive game are not going to be your style of play.
Yeah. So the ones that I was thinking that are kind of like major games that you kind of need an expansion for are things that add like extra players. So Cosmic Encounter, the base game is four or six players. It's the number of players. Well, I forget because the first like four expansions that came with it kept adding another player. So if you have all of the expansions, you can play something like an 8 or 10 person game and you have all of the pieces you need to play that. So, and Blood Rage, for example, comes in four. But if you want to play a five player game, you have to get the 5-player expansion.
Is this your argument for why they're essential?
No. I'm saying they are essential if you want to make some games that have extra players with those expansions, but you want to play with a bigger group.
That's true.
So there's a lot of people out there to say, well, I have 5 people in my game group, and if a game doesn't play 5, then it's a non-starter for
us.
Right. So for them, those kind of expansions are necessary. If you want to turn a game into a party game, that could be like a necessary expansion.
If you want to do an insane game of 7-player Scythe.
Oh, right. Scythe, because Scythe is a 5-player game, and you can add 2 more with the expansion and play 7 players all at the same time at GameholeCon with people who have never played it before. And it plays just fine.
Yeah.
Actually, it really did play just
it
fine.
It really did just play. It was really fun. I think they were pretty good players, though.
Yep. So those would be what I would consider expansions that I won't hesitate getting. Actually, even Settlers of Catan, where it plays 4 players, but you can get the 5 and 6 player expansions. I personally, and I think I'm in the minority, I like Settlers at 5 players better than 4, because with 5 players is an added rule that between every person's turn, you can spend resources. And I think that eliminates or helps reduce the downtime between your turns because that the extra 5th or 6th player may add to it. So those would be my essentials. Time Stories would be one where you kind of have to have the expansions.
Oh, yeah. You can't just have the base game.
Why?
Because you'd play it one time.
And then you'd be done.
And you'd be done because there's spoilers. It's same with like Pandemic Legacy.
So the expansions give you more stories to play through.
Yes.
Right.
So you've only ever played an expansion. You never played the base game with us because we played it without you.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But I mean, essentially, aren't they? Then it would feel like just more of the same game. I guess that's what expansions are. But it just feels like another playthrough of a one-shot game, right? But I guess
it's sort of. So with Time Stories, it's a new story, a new mystery that you're figuring out.
It's like the next chapter.
I mean, I agree that that is awesome. And you 100% would, once you've played the base game, you're going to want the other ones. I don't know if I'd call it essential to even play the game, though.
Well, it's essential to play the game because once you play the first one, you can't play the game again without the expansion.
No, I agree with you on that, and which is what you guys are saying.
And it's a loophole because it's one of those, it's set up like that, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like escape room games where you play it once, and if you want to play again, buy the next one in the series.
Right.
So those ones I don't really count too much. I will put Living Card Games, though. So these ones, like Netrunner, The Lord of the Rings LCG, pretty much any LCG from Fantasy Flight, they will give you enough cards in the box to play that game. But without the expansions, you're essentially just playing with the same cards over and over. And some people, that's all you really need. For me, I just want the new cards. I want the new cards. And it turns into, I don't know if I'm actually playing with the new cards or I'm a completionist.
Yeah, I think you're a completionist.
Yeah, I should check that out.
I don't think I have any games in my collection where I feel like the expansion adds too much, like that I need the expansion.
I think I would agree. I think most of the times I do not have, like, if I'm teaching a new game, I won't teach it with the expansion typically. If it adds new rules, I will take it out. If it doesn't add new rules, it just adds new cards or adds more of the same, I might put it in and just never take it out. Blood Rage is another one. There's a Mystics expansion, which just adds a new kind of unit. And you can put it in there, and you don't have to explain anything extra to anybody. It's just another type of monster, so it works just fine. But otherwise, I don't really think there's anything that's like, I must have this expansion.
Right.
But I'm curious, because I'm going to put this out there to the listeners. I know that there are games out there where it's like, this expansion like makes this game way better, makes it playable. It's way good. Actually, I will throw out Zaya real quick. The base game of Zaya is fantastic. With the expansion, it fixes a few of the more randomy bits. So now that I have that expansion in there, I don't think I would ever take it out. But it also, I played it several times without needing it as well. So why don't we go on topic?
In this episode, we're talking about cards, that is, 4 suits, 13 values, 2 to 10, Jack, Queen, King, Ace. Where did they come from, and how do we use them today? And if you're on a desert island and could only bring one game, should it be a deck of cards? The waterproof kind, of course. Probably. But let's see if we can convince you of that.
So, Christy heard us talking about what we're going to talk about, because she listens to the very end of the show. Right. And she sent me an email about a podcast that had talked about cards just before we did this.
Oh.
So I'm going to give that podcast a passive plug. And Kitty, you may actually listen to this. I don't know. It's called Wonderful. It's one of the brothers from the My Brother, My Brother and Me podcast.
Yes. This is formerly Rose Buddies, I believe. Yeah. It is by Griffin McElroy from My Brother, My Brother and Me. It is one of the podcasts of theirs that I don't listen to because it used to be about The Bachelor.
Right.
And Bachelorette, and I don't watch Bachelor, Bachelorette, so I did not ever pick this one up. I mostly just listen to
those shows. Shamefully.
you should listen to this podcast.
Apparently, they've rebranded it.
They have.
So they're only in the 10th episode. So we're talking about the 10th episode. And about 40 minutes into it, he talks about a deck of cards and goes into a little bit of the history and like he's really likes this. And he actually brought up the idea of like, this would be my desert island item, that and a hatchet, which I like, that makes a lot of sense.
Totally.
So that's why I had to throw it out there. The podcast right now is he and his wife, they both pick a few topics and then they don't tell each other the topics they're going to talk about or bring up. And they just kind of bring them up and they talk about it. So it's
That's kind of an interesting.
Yeah, it's concept. A cute show.
He's a funny guy.
So I was entertained by it. And Christy, thank you for pointing that out. So I want to start out with some history. So I gave you guys homework and I said just a couple card games that you like and we'll talk about them.
It was the easiest homework I've ever been assigned. Chris was like, think of some card games you like to play. I'm like, done. All right. I did my homework.
So, but I did a little bit of homework. I wanted to like get some history and some fun facts about decks of cards because I really do think that the standard deck of cards is so versatile. There's like we played a few games of just random card games before we started recording, and the types of games that we played are so versatile, varied,
diverse.
That all of those things actually.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, where did these come from? And I am not going to do justice to the history of cards. I will say, most people believe that the first set of cards was created in 9th century China. They think that it was created by gluing paper together, like, you know, 5 to 6 sheets of paper you glue together so it makes it more solid. And then they were hand-drawn. So
there's a picture on Wikipedia, and it looks like there's a little person with, like, a hat on and stuff. It kind of looks like one of the face cards. I'm like, wow, that's crazy.
Well, and a lot of them were bigger size, so, like, think more tarot-sized cards.
Yep.
The number of cards varied. The types of suits may be different. Some card sets that are found is like they're just almost like artistic pieces, but they all still have that kind of like common suit trend and like an increase in value and that kind of stuff. And it makes sense because in China, that's where essentially really writing and ink and all of that stuff was first developed. So a lot of these things, that's where everything starts is in China someplace. Eventually, they made their way to India, then Persia, then Egypt, and then finally to Europe, where in the 14th century, they think is where the cards started getting more of what we feel we have today. The suits were different, though. So in Italy and Spanish, the suits were chalices, swords, money, and batons. Germany had hearts, acorns, bells, and leaves. And then the French set, and French and English, had hearts, diamonds, spades, and clubs. And they think due to the English and French colonizations, because seriously, they went everywhere, that deck with 52 cards is the one that kind of like took over the world.
Yep.
And that's what we see today.
Whereas the, I believe it's the Spanish-Italian version, is closer related to what we see in tarot cards yes. today.
Yep, the cups and the swords.
Yeah.
That's what you kind of see.
Coins.
Coins.
Yep.
Yep. And the thing is, like, cards were used for gambling. They were used for strategic play. They were used for fortune telling. They were used for all of these things.
Everything.
And so all this stuff. Now, nobody really knows why we have four suits and 13 cards, and that's what we kind of settled on. But some people have made some interesting, I don't know if retroactive correlations or not, but the four suits could equate to the four seasons of the year. There's 52 cards. There's 52 weeks in a year. Some people are really bad at math and say if you add up all the pips on the cards, you get to 365, which is how many days there are. That is actually not true at all.
I was going to say, that doesn't seem accurate.
If you add up all the values where you count aces as 1 and kings as 13, then you do get to 364, but you're still not at 365. I saw one site actually specifically said, add up all the pips on the cards and you get to 365. I'm like, that's absolutely not true. So, but 364 is still close.
Interesting.
Yeah, but when you think about it, it is interesting. And how at 364, maybe that's how many days they thought were.
You know, who was counting? That's how many are in a leap year. No, that's the other way.
Yeah, 356.
Other way.
366 is in a leap year. Yep. Mm. So anyway, that's an interesting tidbit about cards. Casinos, they use their cards. Each deck is used from 1 to 12 hours, depending on how much play. And then they either get destroyed, corners get clipped, or a hole is drilled in them to make them wrapped.
I have some decks that I don't think I pulled out just now that I bought from casinos that are used casino decks.
You know why casino cards feel so much nicer than your average run-of-the-mill cards?
No.
Because they are?
Because they are. They're also made of, they're all made of plastic. So they don't feel plasticky, but they're made of plastic because it just holds up better. And even a used deck of casino cards is going to be way better and last longer than pretty much any deck that you'd pick up from like CVS or Walgreens or something.
Interesting. I actually have a lot of feelings about card texture and durability and slipperiness.
Well, we could talk for a long time about like the card's quality in games because you have lots of card stocks. Then you have linen finish, and linen finish is just this texture they put on the card that helps the card shuffle and slide better.
I like the waxy feeling ones. I like the waxy feeling cards much more than like the plasticky, like sticky almost feeling cards.
So, and you could do both of those and still have them in linen finish. So linen's just a texture. We're looking at a bunch of cards right now, and none of the cards that we're looking at have linen finish. But if you look at a card and you kind of like show it up in the light, and if it looks like it's like a weave pattern,
oh, yeah,
like a crosshatch kind of thing.
Yeah, that's that linen finish.
Right.
And that helps you shuffle. You have thicker cards. You can have cards made of plastic. There's transparent cards. Like these days, there's everything. I have on the list of things to talk about, and I'll just jump down there real
quick. Transparent cards? How would that be useful? Would that not be counter to
the game Gloom? Uh-huh. Relies on that. And what you do is you stack the cards on top of each other. And they, well, Gloom has special cards or not playing cards, although right, I do have transparent playing cards as well. But as you stack them up, you can see they'll form different things.
Still don't get the reason for a transparent playing card. Why you
it's
would
cool
use that.
Looking.
It is cool looking.
I think I have one here.
I have a set. I didn't think I brought it with me.
It's cool looking, but then like you can't play a lot of games with it.
No, really. It's not like you can see the front of the card. So the card's still hidden from you. It's just you can see through parts of the card.
Oh, I can't even imagine that. I'm going to have to check it out at some point. But yeah.
I brought them. They're plastic cards. At least the set I have is plastic cards that I got for the cruise ship so that I could play at the pool. And if they were to fall and get wet or whatever, you know, you just kind of wipe them off and you're good to go. So
I don't have a set here.
That's fine.
They must be my mom's. My mom is a crazy card collector. Whenever she's somewhere, she gets a deck of cards as a souvenir. So I have also a lot of souvenir card decks that she's purchased for me.
I was
going to
say, you have many. I saw you open that drawer. There's like tons.
I do have an entire drawer full of decks of cards. Yeah, I've got my MGM Grand cards here now.
Those ones probably have a linen finish.
Totally linen finished.
Yep. So you can't hear it on the radio, but they're definitely linen-y finished.
We're all just like touching cards now. We look like total creeps.
Well, and that's the other thing too, is I started collecting, for a very short term, we were playing Savage Worlds, which is a role-playing game, and they use playing cards for initiative. So you deal out a card to everybody, and the higher your card number, the sooner you would go in a combat round. And then they would break ties. The suits would also break ties. So I was collecting like fantasy-themed decks of cards to play with that game. So instead of just dealing out a standard king queen type of thing, you get the red dragon of hearts and
I like that.
So, and that's another cool thing about cards is there's so many that you can collect and so many kinds and so many styles. And at any given point, just search Kickstarter for deck of cards and you'll probably get about 20 different decks that are being Kickstarted at that time.
So just like they're themed essentially for some cool thing that you like. Oh, yep. Bob's Burgers playing cards or something.
Kitty has some, what?
Spencer has some, they're like nudie cards.
Yeah. I remember growing up, I grew up in the 80s and Playboy had just tons and tons of like different decks. Every year they'd come out with another deck of cards.
Ooh, these are like really nudie cards. I don't think I've ever opened this deck before.
It's just all of it together.
Put those straight away before we get distracted. We're a family-friendly podcast.
Josh is already distracted. He's like, wait a minute. We don't have that in London. In London City.
How dare you? We are far, far less, far more crude than you Americans.
Actually, that is true. Yeah.
I have some pictures. Just all sounds classier.
It all sounds classier.
Maybe that.
So, let's see. Oh, I have some more fun facts about cars before we get into card games. A rifle shuffle is what you would consider your normal break the deck into two halves and then you like fan shuffle them together. So that's a rifle shuffle. Essentially, you're just kind of weaving two halves of the deck together. If you do this rifle shuffle 7 times, you have the ability to generate any possible order of the cards. Somehow they mathematically prove this. I didn't go through the mathematical proof, which I find really, really cool. So literally by shuffling it 7 times, you could theoretically reverse the order of the deck. And that's how much, like just 7 breaks. However, every time you shuffle a deck of cards and like truly randomly shuffle a deck of cards, you are likely creating an order of cards that has never existed before in history and will never again exist in history.
What?
Huh.
That's crazy.
There are 10 to the 67, wow. 8 times 10 to the 67 possible ways of putting cards in order. It's basically 52 factorial.
That's crazy. That
is a huge order of magnitude there. Like, exactly. That's insane.
To put it in perspective, there are only 10 to the 23 stars in the universe.
Wow.
10 to the 67 is, well,
calculator 10 breaking.
To the 44th more times that.
Wow.
If you were to shuffle a deck of cards once per second since the beginning of the universe, theoretically about 14 billion years, you'd still only be 10 to the 18th.
That's crazy.
So every time you truly shuffle a deck of cards, now obviously you can put them in an order, any order you want, but every time you truly shuffle a deck of cards, it is probably a unique order that's
never
existed
before. What about
the
way that I shuffle, which is to kind of like pick up like maybe like 10 to 15 of the cards and then like throw them on the top and then like and kind of try and throw some in and then keep doing that over and over again.
Yes. So the overhand shuffle is a really bad way to mix cards. It takes about 2,500 overhand shuffles to randomize a deck of 52 cards.
Yeah, I know this because you both bullied me for shuffling like that. Because I don't play a lot of card games and you were like, oh, that's not a real shuffle. You got to shuffle like a man, kid. And then you showed me the rifle shuffle. I'm like, well, I can't do that yet.
We'll get you there.
Thank you.
One more fun fact. When you shuffle a deck of cards, if the top card of the deck ends up on the top of the shuffle, you call that an out shuffle. If it ends up under the other side, it's an in shuffle. If you do 8 perfect out shuffles, that is, you take the top card, you split the deck in half, so you have 26 and 26, and you take the top card and you shuffle it one by one by one. If you do that 8 times in a row, you'll get back to the original order. Now, don't think that, I don't know of any human, and I couldn't find anything that said that anybody was perfect enough where they could shuffle it 8 times and get back to the original order. I'm certain somebody claims they can. I don't think it's actually possible. But if you could, and they shuffle it 8 times, they will end up back with the order they started with.
I don't know. I've seen some up-close magic that these guys, like, that's all they do is shuffle. Like,
right.
And they practice their fancy shuffling technique.
It is entirely possible.
Yeah.
So the next time you see a musician. next time you're listening to a musician while watching a magician, count the number of times he shuffles the deck. If it's 8 times, he may have just put it back in the same order that he left it in. All right. We should talk about some card games. Well, wait. No, I want to talk about one other thing. Magic.
Magic the Gathering or magic like up close live magic?
Like magic tricks.
Yeah.
Another thing you can do with cards.
That's very cool.
We talked about it a lot a few episodes ago, I think, when I was at Sydney's bachelorette party.
Ah, yeah.
And I was really excited about up close magic because that was pretty crazy.
Yeah. The one card trick I learned, actually, when I was a kid, I was a nerd, so I got into magic like mini, like preteen boys at that time. The one card trick that I know that is my favorite, and you can only pull this off on little kids because most adults know this, and now anyone who listens to the podcast is going to know this. So you have a little kid cut a deck of cards, and you just basically you run your fingers, they tell me when to stop, and you'll stop. Okay, so you pick it up and you have two halves of the cards. You look at the bottom card of the card that you just of the half you just pulled up, and you say, okay, look at the top card and don't show me what it is, and then put it back down, and then you put that back down there. Then you do a overhand shuffle, like Josh just mentioned. Not too much, but just enough, one or two times, and then you say cut the deck as many times as you want. Cutting the deck does not actually shuffle cards. So now all you do is you look through the deck for the card that you saw as the bottom card. The one right in front of it is the card they saw. And then you can give that to them. And then they're like, oh my God, you do magic. And little kids are great.
The only time this might not work is if they get super lucky on one cut. And they cut those two cards apart from each
other. But it doesn't matter because it'll still be if, say, the card you looked at is at the bottom. You'll know that the other side of the deck, the top of the deck, is still their card.
But if they do that if they do that on their first then they cut it again.
They'll put those two cards back together.
Will they?
Yeah, because the top card goes on the bottom.
It depends.
Yep.
I don't know.
Cutting the deck does not actually randomize it. Now, you will see in a lot of games, I've shuffled it and I give it to Josh to cut. That cut is so if I had stacked the deck, now that one cut will make the stack be in a different order. So as long as I do a fair deal, even if I had stacked all aces for me on the top, now that it's cut, those aces are going to be in the middle and it's not going to be someplace that I can control. So that's where the cut comes in. And that's why a lot of basically tournament games, you like have to offer a cut. Kitty is literally cutting cards right now just to see that if I said this true or not.
She wants to know. I mean, this is great radio, I've got to say.
Da, 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 da. So.
Yeah, no, you can mess it up, I think.
Mm-mm. Here, give me that.
We'll do this later. Again,
this is not good radio.
I disagree.
Playing games with actual cards.
So what do you guys got for me?
I made Chris and Josh play a game we've talked about a couple times, Racing Demons. So what did you guys think of Racing Demons?
I'm with Spencer on this one. Josh, what did you think?
So Spencer's thing was that it wasn't a fun game. I thought it could definitely be a fun game. I just want it to be evenly matched because Kitty's extremely good at this game.
I'm really good at this game. Yeah. Also, we are playing with only 3 players. My family plays with this routinely between 5 and 8 players.
All right, don't hold them in suspense. How do you play this game?
So you deal 4 cards to yourself. First, you make a stack of 13 cards, then deal 4 cards in front of you with your stack of 13 to your left. And you basically play solitaire with those 4 cards.
It should be noted, everyone has their own deck of cards.
Everyone has their own deck. So you're playing your deck of solitaire in front of you with 4 cards. You're going through 1, 2, 3, look at the card, play it if you can. Don't hit your microphone really hard. And all the aces go into the middle, and everyone can play off of each other's aces, and you play those just like you do in regular Klondike Solitaire, ace, 2, 3, 4. So you're building up by suit in the center, alternating black and red in front of you until your pile of 13 cards is gone. Whoever does that first shouts out. Everyone stops. You count up whatever's left in your pile of 13, and you count up all of the points that you put in the middle on the aces as positive and negatives. So the more cards you played into the center, the more positive points you have, the less you have in your pile, the less negative points you have. And you play this, we usually play up until 100 is about 10 hands.
So. That's, and so as you're playing it, Josh and I are like, all right, this will go here, this will go there. And meanwhile, Kitty is out of cards and we've gone through one of our 13.
Yeah.
Something Josh like got three up.
I did get three up.
I only got one. I knew though I had a seven and the seven wasn't going anywhere.
I had a king on mine because you have to, when you empty spaces of your four cards, you have to play from your pile of 13 into your empty spaces. Also, like any of your stacking. So like I had a pretty lucky deal also where I ended up with a lot of higher cards in my four cards. So it's easier to play down from a higher card. If you have a two as one of your four cards, you will be able to get it out earlier, but you can't put anything on top of it. So
basically this is a game where everyone's playing solitaire at the same time. And then you unravel, so you count down in front of you and you unravel, count up in the middle of the table.
But it is one of those speed games where you're like, you know, you kind of got one eye on the middle and then you can quickly like throw cards out and try and beat other people too. And that's quite fun.
I thought Josh was going to hit Chris at one point during the game. It was pretty fun.
I was ready to knock you out.
He was really excited about it.
Yeah.
All right, Josh, what's a game for you?
Oh, yeah. So there's a game called, and I'm going to abbreviate it to BS. I'm sure you can tell what the full name is. But it's about bluffing. And the idea is that you equally split the deck amongst whoever's playing. And whoever has the two of clubs, I think it is, puts that card face down in the middle. Now, if the idea is that you sequentially go upwards from two. So if you are the starter and you have more than one two, you could put down more than one two. Now, the thing is, you're playing them face down. And you have to basically announce which card you're putting down. So you could be like, oh, I'm putting down three twos, because you can put multiples down if you're going. But you might not have three twos. Or you might have three twos, but it might be a two, a four, and a six that you're putting down. And anyone in the circle can then shout BS and say, no, I think you're lying, turn them over. If you were lying, then you have to pick up the pile that's in the middle. But if you weren't and they got it wrong, then they have to pick up the pile in the middle, and it's just getting rid of your cards. But it is a very easy, intuitive game to pick up. And I love that whole bluffing element, that whole, oh, are they cheating or not? And it has that whole kind of like calling people out social element that I love.
And this one's kind of cool too, because this scales up to a pretty decent number.
You can get a lot of people playing. Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever had more than, like at 13, you only have four cards each. But I'm pretty sure you can get up to eight pretty easily. And for this game, you can combine decks. And if you want to play 13 people, you can have two or three decks together and still play the same rules. So you've got
104 cards, and then you can just bluff better up to eight. Also, I have to admit that I was cutting cards again while you were giving that explanation a little bit. So I'm not sure if you mentioned, you can totally lie about how many cards you're putting down in this.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Sheriff of Nottingham is a similar feel to this game, but it's, you know, more stylized, more rules involved. You can't lie about the number of cards. So I was always the master of like putting down like three of what I said I was going to on top of two cards that I didn't say I was putting down at all. So then when they'd go to call my bluff, they'd only pull the top three cards.
Oh, wow.
Get away with it.
So wait, hang on. You put like five cards down, but you pretended like you're putting three down.
So I say,
is that even in the rules? I feel like that's cheating.
You know, so another thing I noticed with card games, the rules change from house to house.
Oh, yeah, true.
Oh, yeah.
Very true.
Yeah. So I say, yeah, I'm putting down two twos.
And then you have one hidden.
So yeah, I put down two twos, that's but totally look, cheating. I put down four.
But, I mean, cards. I guess this game
it's the whole game.
I still don't think that's
a now, in Sheriff of Nottingham, to be fair, it is against the rules to lie about the number of cards you have.
Yeah.
So, all right, I'm going to go. So, it's again, we've drastically different games here, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to start with, I could start anywhere. I'm going to start with Rummy.
Good choice.
Now, Rummy is, there's so many versions of Rummy. The basic idea, though, is you're trying to get out of run out of cards. Typically, you have five cards. It's a draw one and draw one, play one.
I always played seven cards.
Or you can seven. The numbers can be anywhere. Some odd well. Number usually. All right, say seven cards. You can draw from the top of deck or you can draw from the discard pile. Usually just the top card from the discard pile. And you're trying to get straights or, straight flushes. Or three of a kind, four of a kind. Now, the thing that makes Rummy interesting is you want to get rid of your cards and you play those in front of you, but you can also play on someone else's. So if Josh has the 3, 4, 5 of hearts straight and I have the 6 of hearts, I can play my 6 on his straight. In traditional Rummy, all you're trying to do is get rid of your cards. And then anyone who has cards left, they have penalty. You get actually all the points of the cards in their hand. So if Kitty has a king and a 7, I get 17 points for that because face cards are worth 10. And Josh has a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I get 5 + 6 + 7 + 8 + 9. So that's traditional Rummy. Now, I've never actually played that game. I grew up playing Rummy 500 or 500 Rummy or Rum 500, or there's a number of different ways to say it. This one works pretty much the same, except for now you're trying to get rid of all your cards, but now you're also trying to get cards in front of you and you get points for what's in front of you. And the people who don't have the cards, they subtract the points in their hands from what's in front of them and you play up to 500 points. You can also in that version take not only the top card of the discard, you can go as far down as the discard pile as you want, but the last card you take, you must play that one immediately.
So you can end up with like seriously 15 cards in your hand in one turn. And it's so much fun. I love watching somebody do that. And then just like, because usually you have one card that you need and it's almost always an ace. And you pick up the discard to get that ace at the bottom and then you play it. And then you just like sit there and like, well, what can I do with the rest of this junk? Yep. Like, make all these. It's so much fun. This is a big one my family plays all the time, so.
Yep. Rummy 500, I think, is probably the best Rummy out there, if you ask me, but.
Gin Rummy, I think, is the best if you have a limited space, and that's the regular Rummy that you think of most often that Chris was explaining at the beginning, where you just have your hand.
Well, Gin Rummy, I think, is a little different because you don't play anything until your hand can play everything.
Oh, I didn't know that regular Rummy you did. So Gin Rummy and 500 Rummy are the only ones that my family plays. So,
yes,
you play your whole hand at once. Once you have a full Rummy,
you can play everything.
You say Rummy and everyone else loses.
Yep. So, and in Rummy 500, you're playing on the table because you can play on different things. In fact, Rummy 500 has another rule, and this might be a standard Rummy as well. If someone plays a card that could have been played on anyone's thing, you can yell Rummy and take that card, and then you can play it, and then you have the next turn. Everyone else is skipped. You take the next turn, and then play proceeds as normal with that. I'm going to give Terrence one because Terrence mentioned Euchre Cribbage, which will be my next game, spoiler alert. He also mentioned spades, but he mentioned a honeymoon style of spades, which is spades for two players. And I'm going to read this verbatim because I don't want to get any of this wrong. For two players instead of four, in this variant, the first player looks at the first card. If they keep it, they discard the next card unseen. If they discard the first card, they must keep the second. Then the second player has the same choice of the next two cards in their deck. Keep the first or discard the second. The players then work their way through the entire deck until they have their 13 cards, and then they bid and play as normal. So I'm like, that's kind of an interesting way to play. It doesn't sound like spades. It's like a drafting spades almost.
Right? I was thinking it sounds like our variant on
Fantasy Realms.
Fantasy Realms.
Yep. So I think that's an interesting way of playing like a two-player spade. So if you really like spades, you can just draft your hand and then you bid what you want.
There you go. Spencer's got like a way to pay spades with you, just him and you.
I'm really hoping he's not listening.
All right, Kitty, next game.
All right, let's see. Let's go Spoons.
All right. This one I actually did enjoy.
All right, so Spoons is a super, super simple game. You have four cards in your hand. One person is the dealer. They pick up a card. They look at it and decide if they want to keep it. You're trying to get four of a kind in your hand. They will take one of their cards and pass it to the left until it goes all the way around the circle of players. And when somebody has four cards in their hand, there is a number of spoons in the middle of the table, one less than the number of players. So like musical chairs, when you get your four of a kind, you grab a spoon. When you see someone take a spoon, you take a spoon until there's the odd man out and you are out of the game. And it is played until two players, one spoon, and it turns just into a wrestling match every time I've ever played it.
It sounds like it's musical chairs with cards.
Yeah.
And again, it's another game that you just take. It's like, oh, let's play this. And this is another one that's great for kids.
These are almost all these games are games I learned at camp.
Yep. All right, Josh, you got another one?
I do, yes. It's called Tourette's. and basically, it's almost, I started to wonder if this was even a card game. I mean,
it's played with a deck of cards.
It's played with a deck of cards, exactly. But it is more of a word game. So if I started, I'd have the deck with me, and I'd turn to my left, which would be you right now, Chris, and I'd throw down a card. And let's say it was the two of spades. Because it's a two, you take that as your sort of seed, and two starts with the letter T. Therefore, me and you have to come up with a word, starts with T, that is not numerical. So, you know, tree. Ah, there we go. I won. I said it before you. I get to keep that card. And now I play kitty. And so you just keep going like that, around like that, and whoever wins the most cards. Now, the thing is, you have to keep score of which words have been said already. You can't use tree again now because it's already been used. And you have to be careful not to use any of the numbers, even other numbers. If it was two, I couldn't say 20. So it's very, again, very easy to pick up, very easy to learn, but it's really like visceral. Like, I play this with Gloria, my partner, all the time, and she's just like screaming over the top of people, like, twig, twa, twa, twi, twa, and until she finds a word, and it just kind of really bamboozles you. So people have all these little tactics to kind of throw you off. But I really like that game. Often involves a lot of drinking as well.
Yeah, well, it's called Tourette's.
Oh, shocking.
Plus, there is actually a version that you can buy that has its own cards, and there's just like pictures as well. So there might just be a picture of an umbrella. So you've got to quickly, like, you know, there might be numbers or symbols, and so you have to quickly decide, okay, what's this thing trying to do? Oh, that's an umbrella. Okay, you, underbelly.
So I don't know if that's a word, Josh.
I think it is.
I think it is.
Under is definitely a word. Underbelly. One word or two?
Well, I think it's a word. I think it's a word. We can look it up.
Are there rules for challenging in Tourette's?
There must be. I haven't ever played it with challenges. Normally, you kind of work it out amongst each other. You're like, hang on a sec. And then it's like majority rules. But it's very fun, very visceral game.
All right. I'm going to go, again, another super rules heavy. Now, I should mention at this point, we're not really talking about hearts, spades, euchres. Any of the trick-taking games?
Because
we did an entire episode on trick-taking.
Did you look up the number?
I did not. Kitty's looking at it now. We are also not doing poker because we're going to do an entire episode on poker as well. I haven't decided if we're doing poker or if we're doing gambling. I think poker is probably more interesting and definitely can cover lots of ground with that. So if you're wondering, it's like, why haven't they mentioned Texas Hold'em or, you know, all these other cool poker games? Keep listening. We will get to it. It won't be the very next episode, but we'll get to it. So the next one I want to talk about, though, is cribbage. Cribbage is a game that I played as a kid with my parents. This was like, we played at the lake and, you know, just played it all the time. Cribbage typically has a wooden board where you're keeping score, and it goes up to 121 points. And I'm describing the board first, although the board is optional. Normally, you don't play cribbage without a cribbage board. The interesting thing about cribbage board, and I don't know why more games don't do this, it has two pegs to keep track of your score. Wherever your current score is the first peg, and then you take the peg that's behind it, and you move it that many points ahead of that first peg. So you can always say, oh, you just gave yourself 4 points. Whatever your last move was 4 points. So everyone can look at the board and say, okay, you gave yourself the right number of points. You didn't like edge yourself up another notch or two.
I always worry about accidentally doing that, especially at end scoring of point salad games where I'm like, oh, where did I pick my piece up from?
Right. So I'm like thinking, like, we should do more leapfrog pieces like that. It's usually just an extra cube or something. So you just put two cubes on there, and every time you get points, you take the cube that's furthest behind and move it that many number of points ahead of your current spot.
Makes sense.
And then you can always see. So I thought that was interesting with the cribbage board. But cribbage is a game, and I'm going to not do this justice. So if you play cribbage, I'm trying to keep it very high level here because cribbage is something you have to play to learn. But basically what happens is the dealer will deal cards to all the other players. We'll say for a typical four-person game, you deal five cards to each person. And then each person will put one card into the crib. And then the dealer will take the crib.
And, is this like MTV Cribs?
Sort of. Only not as many gold-plated hot tubs.
Gotcha.
So now you all have four cards. Now, I play a card. And Kitty has to play a card. So I play a card, say I play a four. So I say four. Kitty plays a five. So she says nine. You play a jack. So you say 19. I'm going to play a jack. So that's 29. Kitty says, I can't play because I don't have... And the reason she can't play is because you can only go up to 31. If you go above 31, you can't play. You can't play. Okay, I get 29 for 1 point. So I got that 1 point. If I happen to have a two, I can put 31 for two. Because if you get exactly 31 points, you get 2 points. Mm. If you get exactly 15 cards, you get 2 points. So it's 15 for two. If you have a run, so Kitty played a four, you played a six, and I played a five, I've just completed a run. So I get, I think it's 2 points for a three card straight. There's 4 points for completing run of four, 5 points for completing a run of five, 6 points for completing a run of six. There's all these different ways of scoring that you have to keep track of, and you have to call it yourself. If you miss it, you miss it. You don't get the points for it. Once everyone's out of cards, then you take all the cards that you have, plus whatever cards are in the crib. So there's one crib card.
This is getting really complicated.
I know. That's why I said, if you play cribbage, I'm not doing it justice. I just want to emphasize how complex this game is.
Yeah.
And knowing the rules is the tricky part to it. So anyway, there's one face-up card. So you take the four cards that you have, plus the one up there, and then you score it as many possible ways as you can. So if I have, say, I have a 2, 3, 4, 5 in front of me, and then the card in the middle is another three, well, I have two runs of four, because I have 2, 3, 4, 5 with my cards, and 2, 3 with their card, 4 or 5. So I have two runs of four. So that's another 8 points. And then I have a pair of threes as well. So that's a point. So you have all of these different ways of scoring. Cribbage is insane. But it's so much fun. It's a way of life. When you're playing this game, it's a way of life.
Wow, yeah. This is like, isn't this like sort of stereotypically known as sort of like an old person's game? Or is this one of those ones? I feel like there's a few out there that's like, old people play this all the time. Bridge, I feel like. Is
one. I don't know of any young person just playing cribbage these days. I will give you that.
I don't actually know any old people who play cribbage. Yeah. I know a lot of people who have cribbage boards hanging up on their wall and they look really cool. But I have never seen someone play with one, except the one time I asked my mom, hey, what is this? And she taught me cribbage, and I immediately forgot it.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I had to relook at the rules. I had to read them multiple times. I have them in front of me.
Well, yeah.
Once you play it enough, you like,
I want to know from the listeners, does anyone know anyone who plays cribbage? Let us know.
My grandmother taught me.
And their general age.
And their general age.
And their general, yes. We want to know one of their demographics as well.
Let's see. I do want to mention Shane loves spades. He says he's won a ton of money playing spades. Jason mentioned Rummy and Solitaire and more. Now, Solitaire, I will say, is the first like single-player game, but also it could be considered a co-op game. I used to play this, you know, with my mom all the time, and we'd just kind of sit there and just like, oh, well, that plays there or that plays there. There you go. You have a co-op game in your hand. War is a game that you just teach little kids how to play and then walk away and hope that the game never ends. So
it never does.
It never ends. Jason mentioned Pity Pat, where you are dealt five cards and a card is turned over from the deck, and the player gets to draw a card from the deck or the top face-up card of the discard pile in hopes of getting three pairs to win the game. So essentially, you're trying to just find pairs. Three of them win. And all right, you guys are going to explain this one that Caleb mentioned.
Mao.
Go for it.
All right, so first I'm going to describe Crazy Eights.
Okay, all right.
So Crazy Eights is basically a deck of cards Uno.
Yes.
So you're drawing to play a card, and you have to play either the same suit or the same number. And that's how that works. Mao is a little bit like Uno, where some of the cards are skip, reverse, have special meaning attached to them. The trick about Mao is you don't get to tell anyone the rules.
What?
The first rule is you don't talk. No talking. Unless a card specifically orders you to talk, but you don't even say that. Right. There's no talking. If they try to ask you a question, you throw a card at them.
Are there penalties for not doing these things?
For not following the rules, you get a penalty of a card.
Yeah. You don't even know how... The first time you play, you don't even know how to win. Like,
you just sit there with anything. Like, this is your hand by the end of your first game. I just picked up like 30 cards here. Like, it's so bad. But then you start watching and you realize... And like, the instructions I got is a little bit like Uno. And you can't talk. And then you just have to watch and have like 18 cards dealt to you. And you're going to lose.
So what kind of crazy stuff comes up that you're just not even told to begin with?
I don't know if I can give too many examples because isn't that like breaking the trust point, of the right. game?
I will say that...
Am I like a magician who's been sworn into the guild of knowing how to play this game?
Yeah. I will say that Caleb did a pretty good brief write-up to give you an example of the game. We won't spoil it here, but it's on BGG. So tabletopgametalk.com/BGG will take you to our podcast page there. And then look for the episode 65 input. Caleb has a description there. But yeah, it's sort of absurd, and it kind of reminds me of like entrance into a fraternity where you kind of learn the rules over time and you don't speak of the rules.
But then like the thing I have is like, you know, because you can't talk, it kind of like loses a bit of the social aspect of the game. It seems like one of these games you play in a dorm.
This one's very social.
Yeah, right. I see that. But
also I believe, when you win the game in some circles, you get to make a rule for that session of gameplay. There are some rules that they start as the base rules, but then for the rest of that day, or if playing with the same number of people or the same exact people, you keep those rules.
Yep. And it's very exclusive because you can only learn it by playing it. Like, you can go read the rules and you can teach other people and you can start your own new circle, and obviously you could do that. But the fun of it is bringing new people in.
Right, so that you can mess with them.
Exactly.
It also reminds me of the drinking game Kings or Circle of Death.
Oh, yeah, Ring of Fire, we call it. Yeah.
Yeah.
God, that... I was so drunk so many times playing the game.
Yeah, that was the one that I think brought our downfall during the drinking games episode recording.
Still jealous.
We'll have another one in, what, February?
Let's go with March. All right. I can do March again.
Sweet.
So I think there's no way that we can possibly talk about all of the different card games that we've played. We definitely couldn't talk about all the ones we've heard of. Really, a deck of cards. Whenever I'm going any place and I'm going to bring games, I always bring a deck of cards. Now, these days I have enough other games where the deck of cards normally doesn't come out, but I still bring it with. It's tucked in the boxes of a number of my games.
So portable, so easy.
It's so portable. And this will kind of go with next week's topic. It's one of the easiest things to get people who don't game to play. Nobody is afraid of a deck of cards. So if you can get someone to play with a deck of cards, that may be something that you can get them to play other things then. It's like, oh, well, this other game has better art and it does basically the same thing. You guys have any other games you want to talk about before I go into pet peeves?
No. I have a million I could talk about, but none of them that I have a burning desire to discuss right now.
All right. Well, I have only one pet peeve to talk about. So most specialty cards, if you look at the card backs of a deck of cards, most of them that are like, you know, company logos or, you know, fun art or whatever, they have a top and a bottom. That drives me crazy. Magic the Gathering has a top and a bottom. Like, there's a way that you can orient it that it's the right way up. I hate that for two reasons. One, if I shuffle it and I start mixing the tops and bottoms, that's really annoying because it looks like, you know, I have to always face my cards whenever I start playing with them. Two, it leads to very, very easy ways to cheat.
Right.
Imagine that I take this deck that has tops and bottoms, and I take all the face cards and I turn them upside down.
Right.
Now let's go play poker.
Yep.
So as long as I keep that orientation, I know where all the face cards are.
Yep.
In Magic, easiest way to cheat in the world, turn all your lands upside down. You know whenever you're going to draw a land. Oh, it's so frustrating. They're decorative. They're not useful. That's my pet peeve with cards.
No, I'm with you on that.
Holding up the casino deck, you will note it is reversible entirely.
Yep.
does say MGM Grand, but it has one.
But it says it in both directions.
Both ways. Yeah. If I turn, you know, yep. Looks exactly yeah. the same either way.
Totally. Now, interesting thing, and I think this was a Planet Money episode. This particular MGM Grand card we're looking at, there's a hash pattern on the back of the card. On one side of the card, the pattern is slightly different than on the other side. So if you were to turn the cards and put them side by side, you'd see just a very slight difference between the two sides. Baccarat deals with needing to know where the tens are. And I've not played that game, but somehow the way that works, if you know where the tens are, you have a huge chance of beating the house. And there is a couple that were able to get the dealer to turn all of the tens the other way. Now, it wasn't like turn all the tens. It was, oh, for good luck, can you turn the tens sideways?
This is a recent story, wasn't it?
It was.
I saw a headline yep. for it, yeah.
So turn the tens sideways. Not even upside down, just sideways. But then when you go to pick them up, the sideways cards would be picked up upside down. Right. And that's how everything would get... they could tell the difference there. Right. Now, not every single deck does that. So they were looking for specific casinos that had specific decks that if they turned it upside down, they could see the back. And it's like you have to really be pointed out what to look for because the average person is not going to see it.
But once you know, you know.
Yep.
Then, yeah.
So for as long as there's been cards, I'm sure there's been card sharks and hand tricks and sleight of hand and all of that
little
stuff.
Little devices in your shoe once computers came in.
They are slightly different.
Yep. Just enough. Now, you would never really be able to look at it.
Some of them are cut in the middle of the diamond, and some of them are cut at the top of the diamond.
Yep.
But I'm not sure it's on every card. Top and bottom are different.
Well, we're going to be looking at a few things at the end of the show to find out. All right. So
you were right about cutting the deck. I've been quietly playing over here for quite some time.
Yes. But it's fun because little kids don't know that cutting the deck doesn't shuffle the cards. So I'll just cut it like a ton of times. And they're like, oh my God, it's so shuffled. I'm like, no, it's not. But thank you for listening. If you want to follow us on Facebook, we are at Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. You can follow us at Twitter at Tabletop Game TLK. You can follow me on Twitter at Game Master Chris. You can review us on Apple Podcasts. I'm still getting used to that instead of iTunes, but either one. We love reviews. They're awesome. They're great. You can also support us on Patreon, which is tabletopgametalk.com/PATREON. Everyone who is a patron automatically gets entered into all of our contests. And again,
in fact, both our winners today are patrons.
They are. And although last month was not a patron, that was an email entry. So email us too, because you have. There's not a top secret. There's not a ton of entries into our contest. So, you know, you are in the more than 1% chance of winning if you email us. So email us. Let's lower that percentage for everybody.
Break the curve.
But yeah, if you want to support us there, then you'll automatically get entered. You can still email us if you want. And I still add an extra entry in there if you email us. And then otherwise, Josh, why don't you say all the rest of the stuff?
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider emailing us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Gilljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stefan, Fuzzy Wuzzy was a woman, Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Carl Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quistra, David Sellers, and Jason Rodney. Until next week, when we talk about getting non-gamers to game with us, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. I didn't talk about building card houses with cards.
Ooh. I started to try to build one halfway through the episode. Didn't work.
Well, if it did, we would have all both come over there and hurricaned it down anyway.